45. Are we there yet? The humid night air got a little thicker. Yimt stomped on a 6-inch-long centipede crawling across the path, grinding his boot into the dirt with more force than necessary. It was a feeling all the surviving members of the patrol shared. They had been marching for hours through air so wet it felt like breathing through a sopping cotton mask. The elvish tree sap did slake their thirst, refreshing them long after they should have collapsed from exhaustion. But it did nothing to cool the heat or silence Scully.
"What about now?"
Teeter frowned and tried to shush Scully to no avail. Yimt growled something under his breath and stomped another centipede. Alwyn took a quick look around to see if any of the elves were watching, assuming that they would not approve of one of nature's creatures being dispatched in such a fashion, but none were visible at the moment.
"Well, are we?"
Scully asked again. It was, and of this Alwyn was quite certain, the 100th time. Yimt reached for his right thigh, then banged his fist against it. Alwyn knew he was wishing he had his drukhar. The dwarf looked over at Alwyn and shook his head.
"It's not the heat. It's the stupidity."
Alwyn smiled, but it wasn't easy. The heat was taking a toll on him, especially with his chest still throbbing with pain. He took another sip from the gourd and immediately felt a little better. The problem was that his gourd was nearly empty, and they still had a long night of marching ahead of them. And Scully.
"Well?"
Yimt cursed and tugged so hard on his beard that strands of it came away in his hand.
"Scully, for the last bloody time, I'll tell you when we're there. Do you see any magical stars? Does this look like a fort on a hill by a river?"
Yimt asked, waving his hand around at the trees. Scully looked around and finally nodded as if he understood, but everyone knew 5 minutes later he'd be asking the same questions again. He was terrified of the forest. If they ever found Critton, the elf had a lot to answer for. The trees, for their part, did not look particularly dangerous, though they were strange. One gray-barked variety had fist-sized orange and black spotted fruit in clusters of three, growing right out of the trunk. Then there was the kind Yimt had dubbed weeping whipper for the thread-thin leaves that dangled over the path, the tips barbed and perfect for getting tangled in beards. It made Alwyn think of home and the great bushy chestnut trees, snow-white birches, and great maples that had harbored nothing more fierce than a squirrel guarding its winter hoard.
"What about now?"
"Oh, that tears it, laddie,"
Yimt growled, grabbing the stock of his shatterbow and taking a step toward Scully. Che-Yi suddenly appeared in front of Yimt and gently placed a restraining hand on his shoulder. With her other, she put a finger to her lips. Alwyn stopped where he was and motioned for Inkerman and Teeter to freeze. They already had, the elves of the Long Watch having appeared all around them. While the soldiers stuck to a winding game trail through the forest on their way to Lugathjor, the elves, 2 dozen, Alwyn reckoned, although it was hard to get an exact count, had taken to the forest itself, moving between the trees without making a sound. At least, not any he could hear. He wasn't sure, but he thought some of them were actually in the branches, too, leaping from limb to limb above them. Every time he thought he sensed something and looked up, however, there was nothing to see but leaves. He checked those, too, praying he would never see another frost-burnt leaf for the rest of their journey, and the rest of his life.
"What is it?"
Yimt asked, his whisper barely distinguishable from his regular voice. Che-Yi chirped softly to where Kyla, who notched an arrow into her longbow faster than Alwyn could follow. She took 2 steps off the path and melted into the forest. Alwyn blinked, trying to see where she went, but the leaf canopy blocked out too much moonlight for his poor eyesight. He'd never find her, he realized, when something made him turn. There, not 30 yards down the path they had just come, standing in a pile of excavated dirt near a gaping hole, was another creature from his granny's bedtime story collection. A corward. Alwyn was so surprised he never even thought to unsling his musket. Corward, like rocks, were supposed to be extinct. He squinted and shook his head, trying to get a better look. When he finally did, he wished he hadn't. It looked very much like the centipedes Yimt had been stepping on, except that this one was 20 feet long and had a pointed snout filled with needle-sharp teeth. Its body was covered in shimmering black and green scales, making its milky white eyes all the more terrifying to look at. The Korward took a few steps forward. Alwyn's stomach lurched. Each leg moved in rhythm with the other like oars on a longboat, propelling it forward at a quick, jerky pace, accompanied by a harsh staccato clicking sound. The creature swept its snout back and forth, just above the forest path, sniffing the dirt. Large, gleaming streams of drool hung from its mouth and dragged along the ground. Wherever they touched, vapor spumed into the air, and Alwyn instinctively knew it must be poisonous. An arrow sliced through the darkness and embedded itself in the Korward's right eye. The creature reared up onto its back legs and shrieked in pain, spraying its lethal venom everywhere. Several more arrows flew out of the shadows at the exposed belly of the beast, but these bounced off the scales without effect. Fully enraged and still able to see out of one eye, the Korward crashed back down onto all of its legs and shot up the path directly toward Alwyn. Its body made a series of rapid S movements as it came on, the noise of its many legs as loud as a flight of cicadas. More arrows bounced off the Korward's scales, but none seemed to penetrate. Alwyn stumbled backward, unslinging his musket as he did so. He heard shouts and felt hands grabbing his arm, but all his attention was focused on the nightmare racing toward him faster than he could run. The Korward got to within 4 feet of Alwyn and opened its mouth wide, ready to take a bite out of his exposed legs.
"Back to the fiery pits with you and walk this earth no more!"
shouted Inkerman, stepping in front of him. He held a small white book in his right hand and held out from his body like a shield. Alwyn wasn't sure who was more surprised, himself or the Korward. The creature backed up several paces, its mouth still open wide, its teeth glistening with venom.
"Back, I say!"
Inkerman continued, his eyes bulging, his lips flecked with spittle.
"Your infernal presence is an affront to all that is good and decent. Your fiendish master has sinned against all that is right and pure. Go back whence you came and trouble us no more."
The Korward seemed to consider this for a moment, then lunged for Inkerman. Two muskets fired from somewhere just behind Alwyn. His eardrums rattled as acrid smoke billowed around him, obscuring his vision. He heard two loud smacks as the musket balls found their mark. A moment later, he was able to see the Korward in front of him, one large hole in its neck, another in its back, two of its legs now dangling loosely on its left side. It clutched Inkerman's white book between its teeth, while Inkerman was scrabbling up a tree. The Korward shrieked, spitting out the book and darting forward again. As Alwyn prepared to club the Korward with his musket, there was a familiar heavy twang, and two black arrows whistled past him, piercing the upper bone of the Korward's mouth and lodging deep within its brain. Its head slammed to the ground, but the legs on its body continued to move, each thrashing madly, twisting the Korward into a ragged circle. Cheyi calmly approached the body, drawing a slender sword from its scabbard as she did so. The faint whisper of a voice, both old and wise, filled the air. At first it filled Alwyn with a sense of peace and kindness, but it suddenly grew to be something far more deadly. The voice roared as Cheyi sliced the head of the creature clean off with one fluid stroke. She held the blade up to the moonlight and eyed the edge. There wasn't a mark on it. Patting the flat of the blade, she resheathed it, and the voice went silent. Alwyn banged a hand against his ear and looked back at the Korward. The legs had stopped moving, and the Korward now lay perfectly still. For a moment, the only sound to be heard was the gentle hiss of its venom, eating away at the leaves of the trees around them. Cheyi said something, and several elves appeared, and went not to the Korward but to the surrounding trees, carefully applying the same moss they had used on the soldier's wounds to the damaged leaves. Yimt brushed past Alwyn, casually grabbing Inkerman by the hem of his kerna and yanking him down from his perch in the tree, and went to stand over the body of the Korward, admiring his shot.
"Probably could have used just one," but he was getting a mark too close for comfort.
He reached down to pull out the arrows, but Irkyla held up a hand. Tyul, the elf Irkyla had called a lost one, stepped onto the path, his bow bent back with an arrow.
"It is not safe yet to remove them," she said.
She switched to Elvish and said something to Tyul, who glided forward to stand directly over the body. A little squirrel suddenly appeared from within the leaves that covered the elf and launched itself onto the corward. It darted over the body as if searching for something, then stopped and sat at a spot near the corward's spine, firmly tapping one paw. Tyul released his string, and the arrow thudded deep into the corward's body a mere inch from where the unconcerned squirrel sat.
"There is parity now. Remove the foul arrows."
Irkyla brushed a hand to her eye and turned away. Imt raised an eyebrow at her, but nodded and began tugging the black arrows out, using the hem of his kerna to protect his hands. Alwyn turned away as Yimpt revealed a bit more than he needed to see as he leaned back and pulled.
"Buggers are in there good," he said, grunting with the strain.
"They are already taking root," Chayi said, coming to stand beside Tyul, who remained motionless over the body.
The squirrel wriggled its nose and jumped back onto Tyul to disappear among the leaves. Chayi pointed to the tips of the arrows at the back of the corward's head. Ugly-looking fibers sprouted there, plunging into the corward and through it into the ground. Chayi and Irkyla began to chant, and Alwyn felt the same sort of strangeness that he had in the clearing when he had watched the frost fire burn. This time was not so dramatic, and after a few moments Yimt was able to pull the arrows free, the roots having disappeared from the arrows. Instead, the two remaining arrows began to take root. The brown shafts shimmered and began to glow as their fletching sprouted new leaves of deep, rich green, tinged with gold.
"Grow strong, little ones, and cleanse this place," Chayi said, offering a blessing for the arrow trees that were now consuming the body of the corward.
She motioned for them to start moving, and Alwyn tore his eyes away from the body. Tyul, he saw, remained where he was, his eyes fixed on the arrows now growing into trees.
"Won't they be tainted by feeding off that thing, Ms. Redowl?"
Alwyn asked, feeling some comfort that the elf was now walking with them on the path.
"Evil or good lies in the spirit, Alwyn of the Empire. That creature is as much a victim of her power as were the children of this place that were injured by it," she said, pointing to the trees around them. "She delves deeper than the roots, far deeper than is wise, and brings forth from the depths things that should no longer be. Long have we guarded against this, confining her to the mountain and the high forest there. But we were complacent, and it shames us that we should have let this peril grow."
"But you can stop her, right? Your magic is the good kind, and that's always better, right?"
Chayi stopped on the path and looked at Alwyn.
"Much hangs in the balance, Alwyn of the Empire, and I would not seek to unsettle it by stating that which I do not know."
She started walking again, gently placing a hand on his arm to guide him. The familiar murmur of life returned. Alwyn felt a spark where her hand rested on his arm, but Chayi ignored it.
"The elves of the Long Watch will strive with all their power to prevent her dominion from finding any more purchase in this or any other land. You perhaps do not realize, but Tyul Mountain Spring sacrificed much to offer two children of Izraik Fari, Rising Dawn, to mend this place. He will mourn this for many moons, and I fear will go ever further beyond us."
"Irkyla told me he was a Diovagrus, one of the lost ones. What does that mean?"
Chayi bowed her head for a moment, then brought it up and looked at Alwyn.
"Once in a very long time the birthing meadow will give rise to a silver wolfolk. Their power is great, far greater than their brothers and sisters. Too often the elf that is chosen gets lost in the purity of its heart, its understanding of the natural order. When that happens, the Chosen One forgets what it means to be an elf, becoming instead a creature of the wild, beyond our recall.
Is that what happened to the Shadow Monarch? Alwyn asked.
Chayi stopped, her grip on Alwyn's arm tighter than before.
No,
she said, her voice heavy with sorrow.
No Diovagrus would do such a thing, Elven of the Empire.
For in saving her, Ragfar, she broke with the natural order. That is something those like Tyul could never do. For to no longer be part of the natural order would rob them of the very thing they hold precious above all else, even if it meant their Ragfar would die. Alwyn looked over his shoulder. Tyul no longer stood in the center of the path, but the image in Alwyn's mind grew stronger, and a deep sadness overcame him.
What if Yimt hadn't pulled those black arrows out of the Corward? What would have happened then?
A new forest might have arisen as this land weakens. A dark, cold place to challenge the trees that live here in peace. They have not fought her power as have the wolfolks of our home, so are not yet strong enough to hold back her influence. They would have succumbed, I fear. Their voices hardened, their sap turned black as shadow.
There was an anger in her voice that caught Alwyn off guard.
I never knew trees were so... well, so alive,
Alwyn said, looking around him again at the things he had always taken for granted. Now, however, he actually thought he could feel their energy. It was unsettling.
Then there is much yet for you to learn. Now as we walk, perhaps you can enlighten me?
Alwyn looked at Chayi with surprise.
I'd be happy to, Miss Red Owl. What would you like to know?
Chayi cast a sideways glance at Alwyn and gave the faintest hint of a smile.
Tell me, Alwyn of the Empire, more of this witch, Vecina.